Good evening. Recently, I've been studying and listening to sermons on the book of Daniel and on 1 Peter, and I wanted to take this opportunity to share with you some of the ideas about living as exiles that we see in parts of those two books. So we will kind of be going back and forth between the two books a bit, so if you're in a paper Bible, you might want to be ready to save your finger or a bookmark and use that. To be an exile is to be taken away from your native country, and it's against your will. And we'll first start in the book of Daniel to set the scene of the exile in the Old Testament. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance, and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. Imagine this for a second. Imagine that the United States is conquered by China, and they come here to this room and round up me and John and Xander and Toby and Rocky and Luke and Jake and Aiden and AJ and Paul and Garrett. You know, just a couple of youths of good appearance. And they say, all right, you guys are coming to Beijing. You're not going to go to church anymore. You're going to learn to speak Chinese and learn everything about Chinese history and culture. And you're going to forget about your life here because you've been conquered by a much better nation, a more civilized nation, and we're going to give you new names and make you just like us. I imagine that must have been hard for Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah to leave the land and the people they grew up with. And we should really remember them by their Hebrew names, not their Chaldean ones. From what I found, their names in Hebrew mean Daniel, God is my judge; Hananiah, Yahweh is gracious; Azariah, Yahweh has helped; and Mishael, who is like God. They were reminded every time someone called them by name of God, and now their names are trying to erase God from them. Belteshazzar means something like protect the life of the king. And from what I found, Shadrach's name possibly is derived to mean command of a coup, which is a moon god. Meshach is probably a variation, meaning who is like a coup. And Abednego is slave of the god Nebo. The point is, God has been erased from their names. And every time their new name is used, it must have been hard for them to hear being named after a false god. And that would be upsetting to have to respond to that. Even when the world tries to conform our values and our beliefs, we have to be determined to serve God. Daniel resolved, which means he's firmly determined to do something. He resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food and wine. Daniel was not going to compromise on his morality to possibly the most powerful man on earth at the time. Are we resolved to not defile ourselves to the things of this world? To overcome sin, we need to have a resolve to not take part of the things of the world. We can't say, one day I'll get over this sin, or just let a little sin creep in. We need to resolve not to defile ourselves. Now I want to go to 1 Peter and bring up some of the ideas of us living as Christian exiles. Understanding that we are exiles as Christians will help us relate to Daniel and his friends and their experiences as they're exiled in Babylon. And we can be encouraged by their faith and determination and continue to glorify God in difficult circumstances. We as Christians are exiled in a world corrupted and controlled by sin. Peter addresses his audience in 1 Peter chapter 1 as elect exiles. Skip with me to chapter 2. We are called by God to be different than the people around us. We are called to lives of holiness and righteousness because we're God's people. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. We are God's own possession. We are his people. Therefore, we are not of this world. We are a united people set apart to be holy. We are chosen out of this world to leave our sinful lives, and now we are no longer from this sinful world, but we are from God's kingdom. And we are not home here, but rather we are exiles, no longer in our own native land. We are out of our comfort zone. Let's continue in verse 11. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. As God's people, we are simply going to look different from the rest of the people on this earth. And Peter is encouraging us that that's okay, because we don't belong to this world and the passions of the flesh. We must remember that we do not live as exiles just to glorify ourselves, but we exist to glorify God. Notice verse 12 again. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Our motivations for dressing modestly, or using different words, or not joking about crude things, or being hard workers, or even showing kindness, are to glorify God. With my good deeds, I need to point people to Christ through it, or I run the risk of glorifying myself and not God. Of course, it's not a hard and fast rule, and there's always room for growth. But whenever someone compliments you for some good deed that you do, try to shift the perspective off of you and onto God. Sometimes people will tell me, "Hey, Daniel, you did a good job on your sermon." And typically my response has been, "Oh, thank you very much," or something like that. What I should be saying is something like, "I'm glad God gave me the opportunity to speak," or, "I'm glad God has shown me this in the scriptures and I could share it with you." And when you compliment people for doing prayers or leading singing or whatever good deed they're doing in whatever circumstance, try to glorify God while you're doing so. Say something like, "I see God working through you," or, "I thank God that he has blessed you with this gift," or, "I thank God that he could be glorified through you." If someone ever asks you, "Why are you dressing this way? Why don't you use the words that I use? Why won't you gossip with us?" Don't think to yourself, "Oh, it's because of me. I want to be better than all these filthy Gentiles." And that's not a wrong thing to want to be set apart and holy. But we got to show people the reason we're doing this is because there's a God in heaven who wants us to live this way and wants to be glorified through our good deeds. We got to show them him, not us. Keep your finger or bookmark in 1 Peter. We'll be right back. And if you would turn to Daniel chapter 2, we can see Daniel do just this to the king of Babylon when he's going to interpret his dream. He escapes himself and humbly glorifies God. Daniel 2, verse 25. Then Arioch brought Daniel before the king in haste and said thus to him, "I have found among the exiles from Judah a man who will make known to the king the interpretation." The king declared to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered the king and said, "No wise man, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these. To you, O king, as you lay in bed, came the thoughts of what would be after this, and he who reveals mysteries made known to you what is to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because of any wisdom that I have more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be known to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your mind." Do you see Daniel's humility there? I think Daniel could have told Nebuchadnezzar his dream exactly how it played out and interpreted it and said, "None of your wise men could do this, but because I'm so special and wise, I have this gift." No. He said, "There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. This mystery has been revealed to me, not because of any wisdom that I have." Let's glorify God with humility through our gifts and good deeds, because he is the one who blesses us and teaches us to live this way. He deserves the credit. Let's go back to 1 Peter chapter 2, starting in verse 13. "Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. Servants, be subject to masters with all respect, not only to good and gentle, but also to the unjust. For this is a gracious thing. When mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly." Just because we aren't of this world doesn't mean we have a pass to not be submissive to the institutions that God has set up here on earth. We will see Daniel be submissive to the Babylonians where he can, and we'll see him be honorable and respectful to the king. But there is an important exception. We can disobey if it causes us to compromise our relationship with God. Let's read from Daniel 3, starting in verse 8, and see this famous story. "Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every type of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the image you have set up.' Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, 'Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now if you are ready when the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every type of music to fall down and worship the image I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?' Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image that you have set up.' Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression on his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times more than it usually is heated, and he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up with haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see four men unbound, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. What an incredible story of faith of these three young men. How can we have the same kind of faith as these three young men? I'm going to say there are three ways that help. We need to recognize that God is the ultimate authority and the ultimate Savior. We need to rely on our godly friends for encouragement. And we need to not be afraid of the spiritual powers. God is ultimately the authority of the universe. And once we realize that, we can become more confident that He will deliver us from evil. We need to put our faith and hope and trust in Him. And Jesus will save us from our sin and from our death if we are baptized in Him and we put our hope and faith in Him. We need a support group of strong Christian brothers and sisters to help encourage us through our challenges and struggles and insecurities and weaknesses. Ecclesiastes 4:9-12 says, "Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken." We need each other to point one another to Christ. Sometimes we need encouragement, and sometimes we need rebuke. Proverbs 27, verse 5 and 6 says, "Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy." In Proverbs 27:17, "Iron sharpens iron as one man sharpens another." We need to have each other's backs. We need to have our own Hananiahs, Azariahs, and Mishaels to stir one another up and say to the Nebuchadnezzars of this world, "No, we will not bow down to your images. We will not defile ourselves with your food and wine. We will not corrupt ourselves with things on the internet. We will not gossip. We will honor marriage. We will, as a lifelong commitment between man and woman, and we are proud to be children of God and redeemed by Christ. And we will stand together and not bow down to you. Because our God is able to deliver us, and He loves us, and He is the one who deserves all glory and praise. Nothing can separate us from that love that God has for us." We can see that in Romans 8:35. "Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it is written, 'For your sake we are being killed all the day long. We are regarded as sheep to be slaughtered.' No, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. For I am sure that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord." God is greater than everything, and you can be saved in Him through Christ's redeeming blood today. If you have any needs, please come forward as we stand and sing.